This is Monitor 66, the first in a new year of weekends. Isn't it a great way to think of it that way? 52 weekends stretched out before you. The only trouble is, this first weekend should be followed by a weekend. But after this one, they'll all seem quiet and restful by comparison. I'm Barry Nelson, happy to be in on the start of the year with you. In this half hour, we'll be joined by actor Edward Everett Horton and cartoonist Al Kapp. First, we'll be joined by a boy and a girl and the sounds orchestral.
Chapstick lip twisters. Try this one. How much wood would a woodchopper chop if a woodchopper had chapped chops? Well, that's a tough one, but if you...
That's easy. When a woodchopper has chapped lips, chapstick goes on. We woodchoppers wouldn't chop without
Chapstick Lip Balm, the fast relief for dry chapped lips. You'll find lip problems go away fast when chapstick goes on.
Edward Everett Horton is one of America's best comedy actors. He's known for playing the role of the fluttery, fuss-budget clown. Two of his most famous portrayals have been that of the Mad Hatter in the film of Alice in Wonderland and the part of Henry Dulip in the play Springtime for Henry. Now, that last role he's played more than 2,600 times. He's been a successful actor for 55 years, so by now he has strong opinions on the theater and on show business in general. Monitor reporter Betty Robley questioned him.
I'd like to discuss a few of these with you, Mr. Horton. For instance, the theaters. You've told me that it perplexes you as to why a show will do well in one theater and do poorly in another.
Well, I can talk from the comedy angle, the plays that are comedies. Why do they laugh uproariously, say, in this lovely National Theater, and they do not laugh in the wonderful O'Keefe Theater up in Toronto? Well, a comedy theater is built for comedy, unknowingly, I think. It has to be shallow, and it has to be wide, and you must be able to shake hands practically with the people in the balcony. And you must look up there in the gallery, and you can see those faces up there. It's an on-team feeling that you get. And consequently, this play, Carousel, why, we've never heard such riotous laughter and such glorious applause and such a wonderful reaction Why, listening to Fresnel sing, as I am in my dressing room. I've heard him now for a number of weeks, and it's always glorious. But here, it takes on an electric something that's... I almost get up and applaud, you know, way off in my dressing room. So it's the building itself. Now, you take a great big building holding 3,500 people, it's all microphoned and everything, you don't quite get the same quality in that, you see. And you have to, for instance, we were told before the curtain went up in one performance, now, folks, this is a very large theater, it's all microphoned, but you've got to project and be sure you enunciate, because the echo comes back, so enunciate clearly. Well, consequently, the curtain went up, and we were all projecting, and we were all enunciating, but the tempo went to the dickens, so, you know, it was so slow and everything like that, and I wondered what was the matter. Well, we were all enunciating, see? We were all trying to make these people hear. Well, the show wasn't written for that kind of a theater, and if you're in that theater, somebody has to suffer, and it's too bad that the show has to.
Now, you said the closeness of the audience, and what do you think about the arena style?
Well, that's an entirely different thing, I think. The arena, I enjoy doing plays in the arena, but there again, that arena section for a comedy mustn't be too large. You mustn't have to be able to get up to go and answer the telephone across the room and take 10 steps to get over there. You should be able to make it in 2 or 3 steps, so you can't have an arena that's too big for a comedy, for a comedy play. Of course, if you're going to do a musical, well, that's an entirely different. You have to have room for the chorus. Then it's, of course, the question of hearing. You see, in the old days in the theater, you take a theater like the Nixon in Pittsburgh, where it was always anathema. Nobody could hear you. Well, in the old days, they could hear Lillian Russell when she sang My Evening Star. She had no voice at all. They could hear lots of people, don't you know, that they had good voices and they all talked. But then in came the movies and in came the microphones, and instead of leaning forward, as we used to when the curtain went up, leaning forward to hear, nobody does that now. The curtain goes up and you lean back.
True.
You don't try to hear.
True.
And they say, I can't hear a word, can you? And finally, towards the end of the show, they're all leaning forward, and they say, well, you all spoke louder in the last act. Well, you didn't at all.
That brings us to your other attitude about newspapers.
Well, I wish that all the things that we're accomplishing that help you to be a better citizen and very proud of your country, like the astronauts and the under the sea and all the things like that, you know, I think that's wonderful front page news. But all the horrible pictures of wrecks and all that, I think there should be a special department in the newspaper boarded with a thick black mourning border.
I don't want to be facetious, but this is going to... It is a facetious question. Let's assume that you're in a show that's a turkey, you know, which probably needs a black border. Would you put that in the same category?
Well... I think the critics, that's a very interesting thing. I think they're very valuable people, and so many... things that they say and they talk about the show, it should be snappier, it should be faster, and all that. Why wasn't that thought of when they were rehearsing? Why is it that the critic has to see the things that you should think would have been obvious to the producer when they started? The only thing that I think that any critic who doesn't care for the show or something like that would be very nice if the last paragraph, just a few lines, he gave the audience reaction. Now, folks, much to my surprise, the audience last night seemed to like the play. They laughed continually, and it may have a run. I doubt it, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Would you like the critic to be specific, to say not only that something is wrong, but how it might be changed? Would you like him to
Well,
be
I think many of them do.
Have they ever helped you with this kind of a suggestion?
Yes, they have.
Can you give me a case in point?
Well,
recall
I think
one?
Claudia Cassidy, and was always very nice to me. She thought I ought to speak louder in the last act, and she didn't like the clothes that I wore in the second act. But she liked the performance, and she liked the play, and she liked my interpretation. Well, that was very good, and I could change the clothes, and I could speak louder. I did, yes, of course I did, yes.
Well, I wish we had more time to speak. We've been talking with Edward Everett Horton, and this is Betty Groby in Washington for Monitor.
Pendulum swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's own bicycles 2x2. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. Now if if you huff and puff and you finally save enough money. If you take your family on a trip across the sea, take a tip before you take your trip. Let me tell you where to go. Go to England, oh. England swings like a pendulum too. Bobby's own bicycles two by two. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. Mama's old pajamas and your papa's mustache, falling out the windowsill, frolic in the grass, trying to mock away the tall fun, but all in vain. Gaping at the dapper men with derby hats and canes. England swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's own bicycles two by two. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. England swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's own bicycles two by two. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children.
Roger Miller and England Swings Like a Pendulum Do. Bobby's on bicycles two by two. Of course, that should be England Swings Like a Pendulum Does, but, well, then you'd have to say Bobby's on bicycles fuzz by fuzz or take the bus or, oh, better leave it swinging the way it does, I guess. It might catch on. More music in 1 minute here on the Monitor Beacon. Barry Elson here with Monitor. As good as my word, here's music. Connie Francis and Jealous Heart. This New Year's weekend has been a strange one in much of the country. Yesterday, it felt more like 4th of July here in the East. We broke the previous record temperature of 61 degrees for January 1st in New York. The Weather Bureau reported 62 in mid-afternoon. Certainly makes you feel silly throwing out a Christmas tree in weather like that. And instead of the usual greeting of Happy New Year, everybody was going around saying, hot enough for you? Well, Was it hot enough for you?
If you can't say anything nice about your present cigarette, come on over to the L&M side, just for the taste of it.
Come on over to the L&M side. Come on over for the taste of it. Yeah, come on over, you'll be glad you did. Come on over to the L&M side.
The L&M side is for people who want taste in a cigarette and plenty of it. Come on over to the L&M side, just for the taste of it.
Next, Monitor's expert on nothing with opinions on everything, Al Capp, and his version of some of the happenings of the past year.
One of the two most fascinating stories of the year was, of course, the story of the engagement of the president's younger daughter to that nice young soldier. But they never told us the best part, and that is, how do you ask a president for permission to marry his daughter? Well, that's a problem that could face any young American at any time. In fact, it may be facing a certain young American in regard to the president's older daughter any minute now. And it certainly would help him if he knew how his probable brother-in-law, how he swung it. Now, there's unhappily no transcript of that historic interview available, but I imagine it went like this. Lucy comes in with a handsome young serviceman, and he says, Mr. President, I'd like to marry your daughter. And the president says, who wouldn't? Then the president says, what business are you in, young man? Now, he can see that the kid is in uniform, but a father's just got to ask. He's got to ask that question. It's traditional. Well, the young man says, I'm going into the freedom restoring line, sir. I'm in training to restore freedom to the brave little people of Vietnam. And the president probably says, a freedom restorer, eh? Well, pay isn't much, but it's steady. Now, the second most fascinating story of the year, in my opinion, was that Vice President Humphrey has left the country. That reminded us all that he was here. It isn't easy to be a vice president. You have a lot to do, but you must do it all so quietly and modestly that nobody notices you're doing anything. The catch, of course, is that after a couple of years of being the perfect, inobtrusive second banana, you may be so forgotten that the top banana wonders if you're well-known enough still to be worth nominating again. A vice president must be well-known enough so that South American students know who to throw the rocks at. But he mustn't be so famous that he can go around showing his operation. The American vice president must be a man so unique and creative that he's capable at an instant's notice of assuming the greatest power on earth. But until that instant comes, and it may never, he must seem to be just about as unique and creative as a rubber stamp. Hubert Humphrey's dilemma is one that, of all people, Lyndon Johnson should best understand. This is Al Capp speaking to you on NBC's Monitor.
Al Capp, heard regularly each weekend on Monitor.
Thank you.
I'd do anything. A combination of English and American talents at the piano, Derek Smith of London and Ray Cohen of Brooklyn, better known as Derek and Ray. Remember, you can enjoy Monitor in all parts of the nation, in and around Reno. Monitor is heard on KOH, Nevada's first radio station. And wherever you are, if you're listening on your car radio, please listen to this. The Safety Council estimated that there would be 440 traffic fatalities this weekend. Well, as of this hour, we have already made alive that figure. Unfortunately, we've gone over that estimate, and 478 have lost their lives on the road. Play it safe, drive carefully, and live to have a happy new year. This is Barry Nelson for Monitor. We'll be back shortly.
Be at home with Monitor everywhere on the NBC Radio Network. WNBC's mailbag is prepared to announce the cancellation of meetings or school closings or businesses as a result of the subway strike. Call Judson 6-1647. That's Judson 6-1647.